Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Oh, the children's movie that is wickedly funny for adults in a way that it earns golf claps. Yes, I'm talking about The Willoughbys, the new animated film. We'll have parents talking their kids into watching it with them. The Willoughbys is narrated by a snarky cat voiced by Ricky Gervais. The four Willoughby children live with their comically cruel, self-involved, PDA-obsessed parents in an isolated abode in a big city. Although all of you are wealthy, the kids subsist on the parents' leftovers, if there are any. And they aren't sent to their rooms when in trouble. They are sent to the basement near a coal furnace. That is, until one day, when an orphan arrives on their doorsteps and gives them the idea to free themselves by orphaning themselves. The enterprising children include Tim, voiced by Will Forte, the older brother who wants to live up to the family's noble origins, musical sister Jane, voiced by the singer Alessia Cara, and the twins, both named Barnaby, who are eerily similar to Danny from The Shining. They are aided in their adventure to find love and the true meaning of family by an upbeat, umbrella-wielding nanny, voiced by Maya Rudolph. She makes everything better. And a misunderstood candy magnet, voiced by Terry Crews. In the words of director Chris Pern, the film can be described as, quote, Grey Gardens meets Arrested Development for kids. Here the kids are conspiring to send their parents away on a long vacation.
What if we became orphans?
That is your iffiest what if yet. We have parents.
Bad parents. Terrible parents.
But what if we didn't? It's like in the books. Pollyanna's died of cholera in India. James, that peach fellow's parents were eaten by a hippo.
I thought it was a rhinoceros.
Just think about how great our family could be if they were gone.
Jane, are you seriously suggesting?
We orphan ourselves. Yes!
Ghastly!
Ruthless.
No! Getting rid of an orphan is one thing. How do you propose we discard of two insidious grown-ups?
Easy.
Hey. No!
No, not there. There! No, there!
What?
A travel agency. The Willoughbys was adapted from a book by Lois Lowry, and it's rated PG. As the New York Times puts it, it's sugar-coated parasite. It's on Netflix now, and its director, Chris Pern, joins me. Hi, Chris. Welcome to All of It.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing great. We have to talk about that description, Grey Gardens meets Arrested Development. How so?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious kind of shut-in family thing that, you know, they've kind of forgotten to go out and the world has forgotten about them. So that sort of, you know, kind of beginning first step is the Grey Garden side of it. And, you know, there's a lot of the film that's an homage to sitcoms. I grew up, you know, watching sitcoms as a kid, and I loved, like, the idea of every character being a little optimistic and earnest, even if they're not good listeners to everyone else's wishes. And so that's sort of the comedy structure of Arrested Development was a first step that felt right to me for the story.
It's interesting you said sitcom, because there are also so many great allusions and nods to literature we heard in that clip and other movies. The nanny, for example, does not look a thing like Mary Poppins, but she can do amazing things with an umbrella. What are some of the other nods to certain classics and why you chose them? One or two.
There's a bunch. I mean, Lois Lowry's book was really this sort of fun, subversive, I think, riff on children's literature. And we wanted to pivot it over to children's film, and not completely just even children's film. I mean, all the car accidents, you know, were kind of an homage to Harold and Maude, if you remember that film. From the 70s, and, you know, there's certainly a Shining reference in that the twins look like Danny. Even the wiggle finger from Tim is Red Rum, another Shining one. But as far as, like, kids' movies go, we really wanted to have, like, three endings. So we wanted to do, like, the what I was calling, like, the Disney Pixar ending, which was the first ending. And then the second ending is an independent film ending, since, you know, this was an independent film made in Canada. So you kind of have to have a tragic, snowy ending. And then the third ending is the sitcom ending, which is kind of like an episode of Roseanne. So, all of that was sort of, you know, kind of boiled into playing with the medium. But we always want to, one thing I really loved about the book is it didn't drift too deep into parody. Like, we wanted to own the references, but then make them kind of organic to the story and the characters. So all of the stuff from Nanny, for example, like she misquotes Mary Poppins wrong, but then, you know, she becomes her own version of what that means to be a nanny. So it was a fun thing for us to riff with.
And I have to say, I laughed out loud when you named the baby Ruth. And she goes to live in a candy factory. That's actually in the book.
That was in the book.
It's beautiful. It's a chef kiss.
One of the things that we had to cut for time that's actually out on the internet now is there was a backstory where we learn Melinoff's tragic kind of Citizen Kane past. And in that was folded this idea of, you know, that name Ruth being this sort of thematic thing for this candy bar man. You know, he was so close to kind of coming up with the name Sweetie Ruth, which is, kind of funny to me that it was a little nod to a confection.
My guest is Chris Pern, director and animator of The Willoughbys. So, you know, like we said, you've listening to this conversation, people are thinking, this is dark. These four kids talking about killing their parents so they can be orphans. that's a better thing. But it's really, truly hilarious in parts. As you were assembling and you were writing and you were starting to look at the finished product, how did you balance that darkness with the humor?
It's a challenge. I mean, to me, animation's like slow motion stand up. Like you tell a joke and you got to wait 3.5 years to see how it lands with the audience, because it's such a labor intensive process with so many ingredients going into the final product. But when I first read the book, I mean, I love, you know, when a story starts with a what if, like I love this idea of like, what if there was this family that had a lot of love, but no idea how to share it. And like these two parents that kind of looked at their children as an unfortunate byproduct of an otherwise perfect union, that felt funny to me. And so we always knew that the film wasn't meant to be a documentary. It was meant to be a fable or a parable. And so this pivot to, you know, kind of, you know, the comedy underpinning, we wanted to be careful that the film never felt affected and dark. So like our choices from the color to the types of jokes that we would tell to the kind of earnestness of the characters, all of that was sort of meant to undercut that dark kind of first what if of the story. So, I mean, ultimately the film was kind of a celebration of family, because really what our main character wants is just to sit at a table and have a dinner with the people that share his name. And kind of what he learns and what he gets at the end of the film is he has a dinner, but with people who love him. And that's sort of the lesson of the film, I think, which is not meant to be preachy, but this idea of like the core ingredient that can make a family great is love. So that was always something that we were trying to say in a way that was, silly.
So in the film, The Willoughbys, and I have to ask you about another balance, is the parents who are played by Martin Short and Jane Krakowski. They're so great.
Aren't they amazing?
They're amazing, and they're awful to their children, but they're also really into PDA, like this creepy, sexually risque, get-a-room behavior. And I'm curious about balancing that, which is hilarious and subversive for an adult, but also knowing that kids are going to watch this.
Yeah, I think, you know, that was one of the tricks. Like we, during the course of making a film like this, we kind of make it a bunch of times with drawings before we make it with the very expensive machines and the pixels. So a lot of the process is auditioning material. So weirdly enough, because Martin Short and Jane Krakowski are so just immediately warm, and the joke of what they kind of offer the film came forward really quick in our process. We had a lot more of the parents in the movie about 2 years ago. And one of the things that we just found when we screened it to the audience is that we needed to kind of have less of them and more of the kids, but also where we put the camera mattered. So if we were with the kids watching the parents, there was like a squick factor that I think, you know, while kids don't really love gooey love stories, especially not from old people, there's sort of a fun sort of graze up against the creepiness that I think if we could, when we leveled it right, it sort of landed in that funny space of just kind of like those hot tub parents that are a little bit just too, you know.
Exactly.
I'm a repressed farm kid with Protestant background, so like I always find that kind of PDA stuff funny. So that was really something that we wanted to keep in the film, but then we had to level it in so it didn't didn't get over gooey.
Oh, that's so funny. Hot tub parent. Speedo dad. I completely exactly.
Yeah,
that's it.
Speedo dad.
My guest is Chris Pern, director and animator of the film The Willoughbys, which is on Netflix. Now, I don't know that much about animation, so I had to read a bit. So please correct me if I say anything wrong. So it's
sure.
It's stop mo. It has you have 2D animation in the background as well as 3D, but it also kind of looks like stop motion. Can you describe accurately what the look is?
Well, without getting into the weeds, I think, computer-generated imagery can, be very real because it's essentially a real camera and you can have real lighting setups and the world can look very, very real. It's seamless. I mean, you watch the Marvel movies, it's seamless. So one of the things that when we started making this film, it was really important that the comedy came forward and that it felt like a fairy tale, not a documentary. So I come from 2D animation, so I used to draw on paper, and there's principles that we would kind of learn as you were learning the craft in terms of how to pose characters, how to hit a pose. It's very almost like theater, like vaudeville, almost like you have to imagine your audience is standing back away from the characters, and so there's a lot of projection. And so one of the things that we really leaned hard into were those kind of strong 2D pose-to-pose principles. And then combining that with the hyper-texture, so my production designer, Kyle McQueen, wanted the audience to feel like they could go to Michael's or a craft store and basically buy all the stuff to make this movie. So it sort of has a very handmade feeling. And that combined with the pose-to-pose animation and the fact that we don't use a lot of motion blur, that gave us a very tactile, almost stop motion feeling. And I love that. I spent some of my career working at a company called Aardman. Are you familiar with them? Wallace and Gromit and Shaun the Sheep and Chicken Run and all those films. So I love that aesthetic. I love that handmade feel. So when that started to come forward in our process, we really leaned into it. We actually have a tardigrade joke in our third act, which is like a little, what do they call them, like a space cow or something? These little microscopic, living things.
Yes.
But we actually put thumbprints in the characters, so they felt like they were literally made out of clay. So we definitely tried to make that world feel like it was stop motion, even though it was really just leaning on just classic cartooning stuff.
Did
that explain it?
It did. It was very interesting, actually. Yeah. It's the voice acting is so important, and you have great voice actors here. What did you learn makes a great voice actor? I mean, it's hard to go wrong with Maya Rudolph, Terry Crews, Will Forte, Jane Krakowski, Martin Short, but there must be something about being a voice actor. What is it that you need to have?
Oh, I think, I always try to make make that space feel really, kind of improv safe. As much as you kind of sweat the words and you try to, write a script to be very careful. I love the stuff that happens in that kind of live moment where you get somebody on a microphone. So with casting, it was always really important to me that, we find good pairings. And a lot of these comedians I'd worked with on other films and also I'd seen them in other projects that they'd been on together. So the Martin Short, Jane Krakowski, they've been paired up in such amazing ways. And I've always loved when Will Forte is with Maya Rudolph. And so those sort of choices kind of ripple into, I think, just the goo in the brain from being a fan of comedy. So I also think early on, I had worked with Will on a few projects, and I love him. I just find his sense of humor really subtle, and the writing was actually shot towards that. So having worked with Terry before, there was nobody in the world that felt more the interesting subversive version of a Citizen Kane or a Daddy Warbucks or Willy Wonka, because he's the sweetest man you'll ever meet, but he's got this sort of approach that is intimidating because he's an ex-NFL player, but he's underneath that there's this guy who loves to draw and loves to laugh, and so that felt like the right casting. So all of that kind of comes from the pairing and also just knowing their voices and trying to write for them, but then when I'm in the booth stepping off the writing and just letting it happen. So it's an interesting process.
And in The Willoughbys, sort of the revelation is Alicia Cara, who's this amazing singer playing Jane.
She's still good.
She's great in it. And did you always know you were going to use her singing voice in the film?
Yeah, well, we knew that James was going to be a musical character. So we were, early on, we do what's called scratch recording. So we kind of just have our cast and crew at the studio just play with the voices. And Diana Studenberg was one of our scratch artists, and she's a tremendous musician. So she started to kind of sing to create this sort of want for the character. And then cut to a few months later, and one of our editors was watching Fallon and saw this Canadian singer named Alyssa Carr on the TV there, and she made a wish. It's like, I want to be in an animated feature. So then we called her the next day and said, well, why don't you come play in our sandbox? And I think the biggest holding of the breath was that, you know, how is she going to like kind of pair up to Will Forte, who was like, you know, an improv comedy genius. And she was so natural and just herself on the microphone, and her comedy timing for like being that irritating pebble of a little sister. Like that was a real like wonderful surprise. And I think she steals the show. She's actually my favorite character.
It is such a fun movie. You can watch it twice. I plan to do it again. The name of it is The Willoughbys. Chris Pern is its director and animator. Chris, thank you so much for being with us and walking us through your great film.
Thanks for having me. I hope everybody enjoys it.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.